Right.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. I'm Tom Egger, and Jeff Oswald and I will be looking at the readings today for Proper 15. This will be for Sunday, August 15th. And the Old Testament reading is from Joshua 24, and the New Testament reading continues the series of John 6 readings, finally to the end of the John 6 readings. Joshua 24, this is a very well-known text, and it comes at the end of the book of Joshua, the final chapter. The way that it is cut as a pericope for this Sunday casts it in perhaps a little more one-dimensional or a little more purely positive light than the chapter as a whole sets it. And we can talk about that briefly at the end. Why don't we just start by working through the Hebrew text here. As it is appointed for this Sunday, it's verses 1 through 2a. And I wasn't sure where they intended to break the 2a there, so I will just look at all of verse 2 and then verses 14 through 18. 24, verse 1. Vayesof Yehoshua et kol shivtei Yisrael Shekema. And Joshua Asaph, he gathered, direct object, all the tribes of Israel at Shechem. Shechem just stands there on its own, an adverbial accusative of place. Vayikra le zikne Yisrael u le roshav u le shofetav u le shoterav, and he called out to the Zakane, the elders of Israel, and to its, referring back to Israel, chiefs from Rosh, head, to its heads or chiefs, and to its judges, and to its, this shatar only occurs as a participle, a substantive participle in Hebrew. Holiday glosses it as record keepers or officials. So it's just another another name for another group of leaders among the people. And to its, Israel's, officials. And then the Vav consecutive imperfect here, the hit pael of Yatzav, to take one's place. Vayit Yatzavu, and they took their stand, or they stood, lifnei ha-Elohim, before God. So this is a sober assembly, a religious assembly. They're standing there before Joshua, the appointed leader, and before God at Shechem at this important time. The time of the conquest has come at least to a significant milestone. They're kind of gathering now as they look forward to future generations and to life in the land. And here the next verse begins Joshua's words. Vayomer Yehoshua el kol ha'am, ko amar Yahweh Elohe Yisrael. And Joshua said to all the people, ko amar Yahweh, thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel. And the statement now that God has to say to the people begins with this prepositional phrase, ba'aver ha-nahar yashavu avotekem me'olam, tera avi Avraham v'avi Nachor. That prepositional phrase, the noun there, aver, is related to the verb avar, to pass over. And it means, basically, it's used in different idiomatic constructions, but oftentimes it has the sense of one side or the other of something. So here, in the construction of on the side of the river, and the river can sometimes just mean the river, but oftentimes in the Old Testament it means the river, the Euphrates River, which it seems to here. So probably it has the sense in this context of on the other side of the river, Aver, with the sense of on the other side. So on the other side of the river, Yashavu, they dwelled, from the Yashav, your fathers, plural, Avotekem, Me'olam, from Olam, from of old, from the very earliest times they dwelled. And now this next proper noun here, Terach, it stands in apposition to your fathers. So it further describes or specifies your fathers. Terah, the father of. Here you can tell that Avi is father of and not my father by that short initial vowel, which shows that it's a construct noun. The father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, describing Terah. So they dwelled on the other side of the Euphrates by Ya'avdu Elohim Acherim, and they served or worshipped, Avad, gods, other ones, other gods. This is, interestingly, one of the first references, I believe, in the Old Testament to the fact that both to the fact that their ancestors were idol worshippers back in Babylon, and also to the fact, in the verses that are going to come, that they serve false gods in Egypt. The picture in the Pentateuch is a little bit, it's ambiguous. You can't tell to what extent Abraham is called out of pagan worship and into the worship of the true God, but it's made clear in this passage that that was indeed the case. And then also the rescue in Egypt. It's clear that God rescues not only his faithful followers in Egypt, but he in fact rescues the people who he's made promises to whom he's made promises, but who have in many respects fallen away from him, yet he reaches out in mercy and redeems them. Verse 14 then, the verses in between recite God's dealings with Israel and how he was faithful to them even when they went down to Egypt. He brought them up with a mighty hand. He led them through the wilderness. And we come to verse 14, and after reciting all of this history, the people are now given this charge. V'atah, and now, Yeru et Yahweh, v'ivdu oto, v'tamim, u v'emet. And now, fear, the imperative of Yerah, direct object Yahweh, and, another call imperative here, these are plural imperatives addressing all the people, serve him, from avad, serve direct object him, and now two prepositional phrases which suggest the manner in which they are to serve him. Serve him in tamim. Tamim can mean whole, complete, perfect, blameless. Here probably, since they're encouraging the worship of the true God versus many other options, perhaps completely or in an undivided way is the sense of tamim. And v'emet means truly, sincerely, or in faithfulness. Now another imperative. V'hasiru et Elohim, asher avadu avotekem, b'aver hanahar, u v'mitzrayim, v'ivdu et Yahweh. And this is the hifil imperative of sur. Sur means to turn aside. The hifil means to put aside or to remove. So set aside, plural imperative, direct object, gods which they worshipped, your fathers did. So set aside the gods which your fathers worshipped, and then the prepositional phrase, on the other side of Hanahar, the Euphrates, and in Egypt, Uva Mitzrayim, and imperative serve or worship, direct object, Yahweh. So this is the sum of all Yahweh has done for them. After this big litany of God's faithfulness and redemption of his people, what flows from that is serve him alone. It's a little bit like the Luther's explanation of God's goodness to us as creator in the first article. For all this, it is our duty to. And so it's only... It only makes sense, after all he's done, that the people should serve and fear him alone. Verse 15. V'im ra ba'enekem l'avod et Yahweh. But if, the conditional particle im, but if bad, ra, bad or evil, in your eyes to serve direct object Yahweh. So here, le'avod is an infinitive construct marked by a lamed, and it becomes really the subject, in a sense, of the sentence. If serving Yahweh, you could translate it as a gerund, if serving Yahweh is ra in your eyes, is bad in your eyes, normally after the first part of a conditional clause like this, the second part, the apodosis, is introduced by a vav consecutive, either a vav consecutive perfect or a vav consecutive imperfect, and here there's no vav at all. They call this a syndeton. There's not the usual and connection there. And it probably serves to heighten the dramatic force of this verse. It just gives it a little more soberness or a little more drama. If serving Yahweh doesn't seem desirable to you, if it's evil in your eyes, choose, bacharu. This is just a call imperative. It gets a under the first consonant there, a patak, just because of the middle guttural. Gutturals prefer A vowels. So choose lachem for yourselves, hayom, today, direct object, and then the particle that means who, so with the direct object marker, whom. Choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, to avodun. And now we're going to have a pairing of ims. And im, when it's paired in a list, has the sense of whether this or this, or either this or this. So, im et Elohim asher avadu avotekem, whether the gods whom your fathers served, who were asher ba'ever hanahar, who were on the other side of the Euphrates, or, here's the other option, v'im et Elohim ha'amari asher atem yoshavim ba'artzam, or the gods of the Amorites who you, atem is the independent pronoun you, who you are dwelling in their land. So here the am on the end of ba'artzam is the resumptive pronoun that tells us how to translate the asher. So we would translate it, or whether the gods of the Amorites, whose land you are dwelling in, really it would be the best way to translate that. So there's the options. You can translate. You can reach back to your past for false gods, or you can look around you in the present for false gods. But then Joshua says dramatically here at the end of the verse, va'anoki uveti, but as for me and my house, this is a disjunctive vav introducing an emphatic change of subject here, no longer the imperatives addressed to the you, but as for me and my house, na'avod et Yahweh, we will serve Yahweh. Famous passage. All right, how do they respond? Verse 16, vaya'an ha'am vayomer, and the people answered from Anna. The people answered and they said, Kalila lanu me'atzov et Yahweh. Kalila is a strong interjection. It means far be it. And here in this construction, followed by the preposition min, a couple words later with the infinitive, it basically marks that as the thing that's to be far, that they're wishing to not happen. So far be it, lanu, with respect to us, from atzaving, from abandoning Yahweh or forsaking Yahweh. Le'avod Elohim acherim, in order to serve other gods. Here we have an infinitive of purpose. Verse 17. Ki Yahweh Eloheinu, for Yahweh is our God, who ha ma'ale otanu v'et avotenu me'eretz Mitzrayim mebeit avadim. He, and here you have a hifil substantive participle, ma'ale, the one who brings up, or the one who brought up in this context. He is the one who brought up, direct object, us, and our fathers from the land of Egypt, from the house of Avadim's slaves, and who, a second relative clause describing Yahweh, and who did l'enenu, before our eyes or in our sight, direct object, ha'otot, ha'gadolot, ha'ela, these great signs, from ot, sign, vayishmerenu b'kol ha'derek, asher halaknu ba, and he shamard us. The enu suffix there is first common plural object suffix on yishmor, and he protectively watched us. This use of shamar to protectively watch over is a famous example of this. Is Psalm 121 really fleshes that out. He watched over us in all the way, or in every way which we walked in it. Another resumptive pronoun and a relative clause there. And in, or among all the peoples whom we avar passed through in their midst. Bekirbam. Verse 18, the last thing that's they credit to God here. Vayigaresh, the PL imperfect of garash, to drive out. And Yahweh drove out, direct object, all the peoples, and direct object, the Amorite, dwelling, inhabiting the land, from before us. Mipanenu. Here it's a little... It's a little hard to tell the relationship between the Amorite dwelling in the land and all the peoples. It says here, he drove out all the peoples, and then, and direct object, the Amorite. Is that in addition to the peoples, there's the peoples and then the Amorite dwelling in the land? Or is it kind of an epexegetical vav that introduces and direct object, the Amorite? So it would translate all the peoples, that is the Amorites, who are dwelling in the land, kind of classing them all as Amorites. It could be taken either way. It doesn't really matter for the theology of this particular verse. And then you get to their climactic statement on behalf of the people, Gam anaknu na'avod et Yahweh. Also us, also we ourselves. And notice it's emphatic because na'avod has itself the first person marked. So also we will serve. It kind of parallels Joshua's statement before, Ano ki, I and my house will serve. Also we will serve Yahweh. And then they give the reason, ki hu Eloheinu, for he is our God. In terms of preaching on this passage, I think, one of the first things that's important about this passage, a passage which often is used to highlight human initiative in choosing God. We need to kind of weigh our options and make sure we choose the right God. It's clear that this is addressed, these words are addressed to his redeemed people who should clearly follow him and worship him alone because of all he's done. And really, Joshua's words invite them not to choose between Yahweh and other gods, but simply are used to illustrate the futility of turning away from Yahweh. If serving the Lord alone doesn't seem desirable to you, then go ahead and choose what other gods you want to worship. Also, this emphasis on he is our God, the final climactic statement, we will serve Yahweh for he is our God, again, is not an emphasis on kind of a personalized deity or a personal choice of deity, but rather is simply a recognition and a confession that Yahweh is indeed their God. He has chosen them. He has redeemed them. He has proclaimed to them again and again, I am your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slaves. And so really it's neither a expression of personal choice, he's my God, nor is it, sort of a postmodern expression of a personalized God. You know, my God would never do this, or my God would never do that. Instead, it's a confession of God as he's shown himself and demonstrated himself to be the faithful God, the deliverer of Israel. But I think one other thing that's important to mention about this passage, and I alluded to this at the beginning, is that this is set at the end of the book of Joshua, where the theme has become, really in the last three chapters of Joshua, serving Yahweh, serving Yahweh, serving Yahweh. And this verb avad has become very prominent. And literally, it raises not an exclamation mark so much at the end of the book of Joshua, we will serve the Lord, but instead a question at the end of the book of Joshua, will Israel serve the Lord? Right after our pericope ends, Joshua is going to respond to the people by saying, you in fact won't serve the Lord. In fact, you can't serve the Lord. He's a jealous God punishing sin. You're a sinful people. This is going to be a problem for you down the road, he warns them. And sure enough, we get into the book of Judges, the next book, and the book of Judges then, within the flow of the Old Testament, serves to answer the question, will Israel serve the Lord? And the answer is no. So just like at Sinai, when the people said, everything the Lord has spoken we will do, and then turned around and built a golden calf and were preserved as his people only by Moses' intercession and Yahweh's deep mercy, and he remakes the covenant with them, so also in the history of Israel. They start off with this great affirmation, we will serve the Lord. Their faithfulness does not match up with their intentions at the beginning. But God's mercy in the end carries them. He eventually does send a servant who does in fact serve the Lord, and who does in fact do everything that the Lord has commanded. The Son of Israel, Jesus, who fulfills their calling in a sense, and who wins mercy for all of us. And we can also see the same dynamic in our own lives. At our baptism, at our confirmation, we make pledges to the Lord, and rightly so. He's the God who has made us and redeemed us. We pledge that we will serve him, be faithful even unto death. And yet in so many ways, like ancient Israel, we do not live up to the faithfulness to which we're called and even which we promise. And in the end, it is God's mercy which has saved us in Christ through the forgiveness of our sins. All right, we're over time on Old Testament. We'll turn to John 6.